Auditor Balderas, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you with us. Want to start off before we talk about some of the specifics in the U.S. Senate campaign. The audit in Sunland Park, if you can bring us up to date on where that stands.
Sure. We have reviewed over 7,000 documents, hundreds of hours involving about seven auditors, and we are progressing very quickly. We anticipate releasing a report in the next couple weeks. We have been working closely with the District Attorney of Doña Ana County and various other agencies, and we anticipate that this report will have numerous findings related to violations of law and regulation. And more importantly, the report will be referred to various federal, state agencies, as well as the governor's office. And so we're working night and day on this report. It's of very important significance for the state of New Mexico and for the citizens of Sunland Park. And we would anticipate that it'll be a report that is very helpful in bringing about financial stability in that community.
So it sounds like from your answer that this, in terms of the audit, that this is possibly going to be more than just something for the county prosecutor to review. This may involve state and federal charges as well.
It will involve various agencies. You know, we think that because of the deficiencies and the findings and the controversies, that there should be various agencies involved, because you deal with state, federal, and local funds. You're dealing with various departments involving water services, fire department services, economic development funds that we are auditing. So, you know, to really restore Sunland Park with some reliable confidence and stability, we believe that various agencies will have to be involved. We will also be conducting a secondary phase of an audit this summer using independent auditors and our staff, because what we're also identifying is that Sunland Park has various other issues that we just can't get to right now because we're trying to turn around a report as quickly as possible for law enforcement authorities and, of course, the governor of New Mexico.
That kind of is a natural progression to my next question. It sounds like you're revealing through this audit so many different issues. Does it occur to you that there are some kind of reforms that are needed to prevent the kind of problems that you're finding in this audit from ever having a chance to occur in a municipality in the state of New Mexico?
Well, we have been identifying for several years. In fact, 2009 was the first report that we designated this community as an at-risk entity. And you're right, various agencies, even 2009, 2010, did not play an active role in making Sunland Park correct many of their deficiencies. And so what I'm optimistic about is that various reforms, such as bringing additional oversight on behalf of Department of Finance and local government, they need to provide greater training and greater resources to all rural governments in New Mexico. You know, if you look at Sunland Park, if you look what happened recently in Columbus, New Mexico, rural communities have historically struggled to retain technical staff. They have struggled to interact with proper oversight authorities. But most importantly, Sunland Park and various communities throughout the state have really struggled to take corrective action. So in essence, what you have is communities that have been making the same mistakes over and over and over. But what is different is we see a heightened infusion of criminal elements, much able to exploit and create waste, fraud, and abuse at a level that I'm very concerned about. So I'm confident that many agencies are dealing with this as a top public policy issue across the state of New Mexico.
Speaking of public policy related to this, what do you make of the process to replace Mayor-elect Salinas, who could not take office?
Well, that's one of the other areas that we're monitoring closely. As you know, when you have financial instability, it only fuels political instability. And I'm very concerned that the city council understand their role as a fiduciary oversight board. I mean, they are a board of finance, which means they have to operate as a check to the organizational and operational mission of Sunland Park. And more importantly, the mayor has to be a strong executive, a strong leader. And right now, it seems like Sunland Park is just struggling to fill the position of mayor. So we're going to need the assistance of the governor. I think the attorney general is going to have to take a more active role in figuring out a lawful process in which the citizens of Sunland can appoint or elect a mayor. It's been quite tragic what has happened to the citizens there, both an election and electoral process that has broken down. And now it seems like there is no clear pathway for the citizens of Sunland to appoint a strong executive leader in that community. And it's very tragic.
One final question on this, and we'll wrap up the Sunland Park issue for this interview. In relation to what you said, appoint, elect, there was an election. What do you say to folks who voted in that election, and they're saying that since Mayor-elect Salinas was not able to take office, one of the other candidates who was in the election, who participated, should have been one of them people appointed mayor because there was an election?
It would seem logical. You know, I have not weighed in heavily on the governance issues as it relates to the election. I would assume the Secretary of State and the district court judge and various advocates need to continue to make that case. You know, I'm very concerned that the citizens of Sunland have a transparent government and a reliable government. And I would think that, you know, the more and more days that go by without a strong mayor who can lead, the more concerned that I become. So, you know, I'm hopeful that they work that out. It would seem that the appointment process will have to take its course. But again, it's very unfortunate that we're sitting here today and we don't have direct guidance from the mayor of Sunland Park at this point.
Okay. Auditor Balderas, thank you so much for taking time out to address that issue. I realize it's sensitive and you can only say so much as this continues, but we appreciate it.
Sure.
Moving on, tell us why you are running for U.S. Senate.
Well, I am running out of a sense of urgency in that I really believe the American dream is at risk and in dire condition. And I was a humble young man out of Wagon Mountain, New Mexico, population 300, and was afforded many opportunities. But even growing up in poverty, I did not realize that I was poor because I had a sense of optimism, a sense of belief in this country that I would work hard and be provided wonderful opportunities to raise a family and develop a career. And of course, here I am today that for the first time in our generation, we have too many New Mexicans that believe and are very worried that for the first time, our future generation will actually be worse off than we are today. And so I take that feedback very seriously and out of a sense of urgency am running to bring great reforms to Washington, run on a campaign of inspiration, and run on a campaign that involves many citizens in New Mexico who are very frustrated with Washington. So this campaign is about inspiration, it's about reform, and it's about sending a unique voice to Washington that will truly represent underdogs as we know them here in the state of New Mexico, because we have to really embrace all the opportunities that are at our forefront. But in order to do that, we need the right voice and the right type of leader to involve many of us at the table.
You mentioned where you grew up, and that is in your campaign commercial, which I had a chance to see. It's something you write about on your website. Tell me more about that, about growing up in Wagon Mound, and why this has been such a powerful influence in your life?
Well, Wagon Mound is a very poor community in isolation. It's a frontier community. It does not get its values from Santa Fe, New Mexico. It does not get its values from Washington, D.C. But it provided for me a wonderful backdrop of values that taught me to work hard, to try to do the right thing, and really have a sense of optimism that if you work with your neighbor and you take care of your family, that this country is a wonderful country to fight for and to contribute. And what I've learned there is that you can grow up in poverty and yet succeed in many ways and make many contributions giving back to your community. So Wagon Mound has become kind of a campaign symbol that, you know, you are an underdog, but we are all a state of underdogs at this point. And in this country's direction right now, many Americans feel like they're underdogs. So Wagon Mound provided me a wonderful life, and I have never forgotten those values. Every day that I govern and I have to make tough decisions that are not always popular, I think of the people of Wagon Mound, and I think of the wonderful experiences of humility and perseverance that I learned from my grandfather and my mother. So Wagon Mound has given me a lot. But there are a lot of communities across New Mexico that represent and look a lot like Wagon Mound and also face many of the struggles that we're facing today.
Speaking of those struggles, looking at your website, you outline policy on a variety of different issues that I want to go over with you. And the first one is the one that's on a lot of our minds, job creation. We've got a real challenge with this continuing unemployment situation in New Mexico and around the entire country, and record numbers of folks who have fallen into this long-term unemployed situation where they look for a year or 2 years and cannot find good full-time employment.
Well, absolutely, and that's what really frustrates America, and is that we understand that we are the most powerful, wealthy nation in the world. And yet Americans, including New Mexicans, look around and they wonder, why is it that Washington is so broken and Washington has financially mismanaged our finances to the degree that that our economy collapsed? And one of the things that I think we need new generation leaders to do is focus on small business and focus seriously on creating a diverse economy that provides opportunities for everyone. And the way you do that, it's going to take multiple approaches, but the first area I would focus on is reinvesting in the Small Business Administration. The Small Business Administration in Washington has been gutted, and it has not been improved to the degree that I think it needs to be at. The Small Business Administration could provide many more loans and guidance in training and really be a stronger resource for the small business individual in New Mexico. The second thing I would do is reform the tax code, where we provide more innovation incentives. And if you're willing to put someone that's on the unemployment line to work, that you should be receiving full write-off value and full credit in the tax code. And not favor multinational corporations, but really invest in the small business person that's investing in your community. Then, of course, third, we are lagging behind in vocational and job training. I would begin to use local governments and universities and junior colleges to partner for strategic job training so that we really could leverage off some of our greatest resources, which are our human beings in the community and also our educational institutions, so that we really could begin to fill these jobs. I mean, we have technical jobs right now in New Mexico, in Silver City, Las Cruces, and Albuquerque, that we cannot fill because we have not done strategic training and really made that type of commitment. So I agree with you. I mean, the economy and the American dream are something we have to invest in, but we need really a Washington that's going to prioritize around the small business organization and not big business in Wall Street or big business that favors multinational corporations.
Of course, as you know, Auditor Balderas, a lot of folks say that we got into this situation with the recession and unemployment because of incredible irresponsibility amongst a number of firms and the Wall Street collapse that occurred a number of years ago. And one of the issues that you pinpoint on your website is corporate accountability. Tell me about that.
Well, I am a big fan of small business. I'm a big fan of some of our responsible corporate partners who have created vast amount of wealth and innovation and really provided opportunities for employees to provide for their families. However, like anything in life, if you do not have balance and accountability and oversight, that industry, the banking industry and the investment industry, really went awry and began to make risky, questionable investments, both with public dollars and private dollars, to the degree that some firms were driven by greed. And with the lack of oversight in Wall Street and the deregulation movement of the 80s and 90s, what you saw was a Wall Street that began to get out of touch with Main Street and Main Street communities that produce goods and services. So you had a tension where there just was too much opportunity for greed and abuse. And what ended up happening is that the taxpayer, the American taxpayer, had to bail out these institutions at an excessive rate with very little accountability. And one of the things that a senator should be doing is also making government more accountable, but also making Wall Street and some of our largest players accountable as well. So there are great corporate responsible firms out there, but there are also some firms that require some regulation and some policy making. And we really need senators that look out for the common interest and the public interest, not just interests that profiteer.
Okay. I know you also cite on your website fiscal responsibility as a priority, and this can go in a lot of different directions. It's also, as you know, a challenging time to talk about this issue because we are still struggling economically, and many people are arguing that along with cuts that may need to be made on the federal level, we also need investment. So I want to get your sense on that and that balance.
Sure. You know, being fiscally responsible with the budget and our investments is something that requires us to really protect the tax dollar, but also define what the outcomes and benefits for those tax dollars will be to the average citizen. And I really believe that fiscal accountability is about making the right investments in education, in job training, and in small business, that if you invest those dollars, they will produce wealth at an alarming rate for all Americans. At the same time, we have to be cognizant when we're overextended. And we got into two wars and supported the Bush tax cuts, which created an imbalance in our finances. And you have a Congress that has yet to take responsibility for reining those realities in. In fact, right now they're barely talking about banning conflict of interest for Congress who are investing in their own firms. Right now they're barely talking about cuts, but to an irresponsible degree, I believe they should start off looking at efficiencies and costs-cutting measures that do not impact the most vulnerable citizens. So I think that you need to continue to invest in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, but you also need to provide greater oversight so that we can do a better job in a more efficient way.
You've already mentioned education a number of times, and so I want to give you a chance to talk about this issue just on its own, because it is, again, one of your top priorities, one of the things that you list on your website. And it's not an easy issue because you're dealing with something, of course, that there's a federal role for education, but we also have a lot of local school districts that play a key role in the future of education in this country collectively. And it's a difficult issue. And a lot of people are very critical, as you know, of how the federal government has been dealing with this issue over the last number of years, back to when the Bush administration put in its policy of leaving no child behind, as the slogan went for that particular piece of legislation. Some, as you know, argue that it has not been effective. It was not funded properly and maybe not planned properly. And it's a controversial issue, so we need to devote some more time to it.
Absolutely. I think education and the economy go hand in hand, that at the end of the day, we are competing on a global stage, and we see nations that are consuming energy at an alarming rate. They are building infrastructure, and they are investing in their human minds in the areas of education. So we are in a global competition to sustain our quality of life and our way of life in this nation and in the world. And one of the things that I think we need to really reinvent ourselves is how we look at education. And I believe that we need to invest in early childhood education. I think we are barely putting forth drops in the bucket as it relates to investing in early childhood education. You know, we spend more on cigarettes in this country than we do early childhood education, and it's one of the strongest indicators how well a child succeeds by way of where we start them off in the educational process. And so there needs to be a man on the moon commitment to early childhood education to better strengthen our whole educational spectrum in the country. The second area, of course, is we need to provide professional development to instructors and teachers all over this nation. And I think the federal government has failed in providing enough professional development opportunities, whether it's grants or loans. We have not afforded teachers the tools that they need to be on the front lines to effectively really combat the wave and the challenges in terms of educating our youngsters in this nation. And then finally, we have a higher education crisis where you have students graduating from high school. If they finally make it through high school, and we're losing too many of them at the high school level, but if you succeed and survive, college accessibility in terms of its costs, in terms of student loans, is at an all-time crisis level. And I believe we need to start to look at universal junior college training, trades training. Education at the secondary level needs to be afforded to everyone, or else we will pay the price. At some point down the road, our society will pay a long-term price for falling behind in the global competitive economy, whether it's through criminal acts or lack of productivity. If we don't invest in our American youngster today, both at the early childhood and high school and collegiate level, we're going to continue to lag behind and hence have a weaker position in the global economy.
You also list the safety net as a major issue for you, and certainly this is one that economists say that at some point Congress is going to have to look at and pass legislation to, in particular, deal with future deficits for Social Security, for Medicaid, for Medicare, and there are deep divisions on this. As you know, Congressman Paul Ryan has proposed massive changes which have wide support amongst Republicans, and Democrats are fiercely opposed to them for the most part. Let's talk about this, because this is really a key issue for the future of this country and for the security of millions of people.
We absolutely have to make the tougher choices in drawing down our military conflicts, which were very costly to the American taxpayer and, of course, to our treasure and our human costs of sending our youngsters into harm's way. We also have to let the Bush tax cuts expire, so that we can create additional revenue generation. But we also have to create a government that's more innovative, that does more with less in this fiscal crisis that we're in right now. However, as we're doing all of those things to rein in our fiscal stability, One of the things that I'm very committed to is that we don't put as an option on the table benefits cuts to our most vulnerable populations. I think it is abhorrent and fiscally irresponsible for the mismanagement deeds of the past to now somehow say we're going to balance the budget by extending massive, massive cuts in benefits to some of the most vulnerable populations who didn't really contribute to the mismanagement of the finances in Washington, D.C. So I would start off with a responsible budget that begins to rein in spending as it relates to military conflicts, rein in spending as it relates to government services. But I would also be very cautious and safeguard our most vulnerable populations, that we don't start with very sensitive funds and benefits that, you know, Social Security beneficiaries, the mentally ill, the elderly. I think it's abhorrent. We are a nation of great justice, and the fact that Congress is willing somehow to reduce the benefits when, in fact, these beneficiaries did not create this fiscal mess is something that we would really push back on as a U.S. senator.
Okay. Time for one final question. And so we get to all of the major issues that you've outlined on your website, and that is international policy. You've already expressed some concern over drawing down some of our military conflicts in the world, and want to give you a chance to expound on any additional points you want to make on international policy.
Sure. You know, I think that if we invest in education, if we invest in innovation and in the small business of this country, that we are going to have a higher standing in the world and also begin to draw down on our use of the military. You know, I also think that our innovation in New Mexico as it relates to research and development and our strong bases and laboratories here in New Mexico need to be protected. And we need to make sure that we protect those jobs in New Mexico. And I think the longer that we ignore or kick the can down the road on foreign policy, that we don't become more strategic internationally, the more at risk we are at potentially hurting employment and hurting civilian jobs and research jobs and military jobs here in the state of New Mexico. What's happening in Los Alamos right now, where nearly $400 million is now leaving because they're saying they have to cut back on those projects, to me is abhorrent when we haven't made the tough decisions both internationally to begin to draw back our spending overseas. So we need to really begin to look at reducing our foreign aid, and we need to look at how we're overextended internationally so that we can really invest domestically in education and invest in the state of New Mexico and make sure that New Mexico is a world leader in areas like education, innovation, energy, and really at the end of the day, providing a better quality of life so that we have a stronger, not just a bigger government or a smaller government, but that we have a better government in Washington, D.C., that the citizens of New Mexico can begin to restore confidence and really get out of this negativity that they have, that Washington is broken. So it's a wonderful opportunity for me to run for the Senate, and we really are a grassroots campaign, but we are built on inspiration and trying to protect the public interest in Washington, D.C.
State Auditor Hector Balderas, running for U.S. Senate. Thank you so much.